Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. I'm thrilled to have Nick Loper joining me today. Nick helps people earn money outside of their day job. He's an author, online entrepreneur, and host of the award-winning Side Hustle Show podcast, which features new part-time business ideas each week. As chief side hustler at sidehustlenation.com, he loves deconstructing the tactics and strategies behind building extra income streams. Nick, thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'd love if you could start off by sharing with our listeners what you do and what led you there.
Oh man, well today I'm really excited to be the host of the Side Hustle Show, which is a long-running at this point podcast about part-time entrepreneurship, creative ways to make extra money, how to start a business in your spare time. There's like 400 episodes, so there's plenty to choose from in the archives over there. And on top of that, I do written content on the same topic at sidehustlenation.com. And just that's kind of the main gig these days, which started, of course, like many things do, as a side project from another business that I was running at the time. But that's the main focus these days, and then chasing around a couple young boys.
So fun. What made you actually want to start Side Hustle Nation and even the podcast too? Like, what was your reason for wanting to be able to teach others how to be able to start a part-time business?
Oh my gosh. So, you know how everyone, you know, when you're trying to come up with business ideas, everybody kind of gives you the same advice of like, well, what do you never get tired of talking about? You know, what do you, you know, what lights you up? What have you done in your own life that other people ask you for help with? And in a lot of ways, like the answers to all three of those were this, you know, this lower risk brand of entrepreneurship. Like, hey, you started something on the side. How did that work? And on top of that, I was just such a, I don't know, I loved geeking out on different business models and trying to reverse engineer, like, okay, where does the revenue come from? Like, that's really creative. How did you come up with that? How'd you get your first customers? All that stuff. Really loved to dive into those types of stories and break down, well, what, you know, how does this actually work? And so I had my own experience, which my original side hustle was like an affiliate business in the footwear space. So it was like a comparison shopping site for shoes, basically, that would pull in the catalogs from Zappos and Amazon and all these different stores and tell you where you could find the best price on your next pair of shoes. And when somebody bought through the site, it would earn an affiliate commission. So that was my original business that I felt at least gave me some sort of credibility to begin talking about this. But what really started to take off was sharing the stories of other people, kind of been there, done that, in completely different random, you know, lots of different business areas, and just, you know, pointing the mic at them in the form of the podcast and letting them tell their stories.
I love it, especially too with Side Hustle Nation and the Side Hustle Show podcast. I mean, most times when entrepreneurs are starting their business, it is a part-time business. So I really admire that you share all of this valuable content for people who are kind of in that position looking to learn how to do it from people who have done it before.
Well, thank you for that. And that was, part of that was like the narrative coming out of Silicon Valley, or the, you know, you maybe have heard this, like an entrepreneur is somebody who jumps off the cliff and figures out how to build their parachute on the way down. Like, that sounds terrifying. Don't do that. You know, the part-time, like, start something small, start low risk, start it on the side. That seems so much more realistic for the vast, vast majority of people. And I didn't see enough of that being shared. So that was definitely part of it too.
Absolutely. And so when you started it, like, did it start off as something small that you eventually kind of built on with more content as you heard from people what they're looking for? Or like, what was your process like with that?
Oh my gosh, it was so slow. It was like, I had no idea. I thought of myself as a writer first and foremost. So in the beginning, definitely prioritized the blog content, which relatively speaking, nobody was reading because I didn't understand SEO and marketing and all that stuff. But the podcast, like committed to doing the podcast every week. And within the first year, that had grown probably three times faster than the blog in terms of the reach and exposure and just traction. So I was like, well, maybe there's something here. You know, maybe I had to dial back the writing and double down on this audio format. And so for the next several years, that's kind of what happened, and it became much more known for the show. And I think that's a more valuable, I mean, you're seeing it from producing your own podcast. It's like somebody's going to tune into you 30, 40 minutes at a time and do it week after week after week. They build a pretty serious relationship with you. Mm. Like they feel like they know you much more so than somebody who, you know, might occasionally scan the, you know, the bullet points on your blog post for 5 or 10 minutes. It's like it's a deeper relationship. I think that was something that I didn't really understand going into it, but have become a beneficiary of, you know, several years later.
Absolutely. And especially too, with the podcast and blog, people consume those in different like settings and environments. So like with a podcast, people can listen to it while they're driving in the car or while they're like at the gym or anything like that. But with a blog post, I hope people aren't reading it while driving in the car and stuff yeah. like that. So you're absolutely right. It's like you have this almost like one-to-one if it's a solo host show, or one-to-two if there's a guest on it, like relationship with these people as they're listening to your episodes.
Yeah.
And from there, and I'm curious to hear also with your perspective of starting this affiliate business in the footwear industry, since this kind of led to everything, what was the most difficult part of starting your business while young?
That's a good question. I mean, the most difficult thing that I struggled with was just like the constant not knowing if it was going to work. I don't know if that, I guess that didn't really even bother me, but it was like, there was an upfront investment in website development, which could probably be shortcut with different, software tools and stuff that exist now that didn't exist then, but it was going to be probably 10 grand in total to get this thing built and, you know, just bare bones functionally operational. And that was as a percentage of my net worth at, you know, 22, 23, whenever this started, it was like, that was huge. That was a big bet to place. Mm. But prior to doing that, I had some form of validation in that I had been running kind of direct link text ads with a very low budget, two specific models of shoes. And so that was a way to validate for far less risk. Yes, people are buying shoes on the internet. That was, you know, problem number one to validate. And yes, they would buy them through this link. Now, the next unknown was like, would they buy them through this unknown website? Like it didn't have a brand name. My only criteria was I wanted shoes to be in the URL. So it would have like a perceived level of authority. Like, hey, I'm looking for shoes. These guys have shoes in their name. They must know what they're talking about. And that was it. And that was kind of the bigger unknown. And it took, like any software project does, took way longer to finish the website than of course they actually said it would. And so it was like this big waiting game. And I remember running these ads like for the first, you know, that's the site is finally live. We've done all this bug testing and it's kind of like, turning on this engine to a car you built yourself. Like, is it going to start, you know? And then I remember seeing kind of the first affiliate commit. I was like traveling for my day job. So I remember, you know, logging in at the hotel at night, like, did anybody buy anything today? And sure enough, like there were a couple sales. I was like, okay, this could work. So that was really rewarding.
I love that. And now I'm actually curious, like what made you want to start with the affiliate footwear business? Like, was there a specific part to it that you saw that you really thought could make it to be built up to be something big?
It was just totally luck of the draw. Like I had an internship in college with a footwear retailer, actually, you know, family-owned company that had a brick and mortar shoe store in Seattle. And then in the early days of the internet, they'd had this crazy idea, like, what happens if we put some of our backroom inventory up on the internet and see if anybody buys it? And so of course, by the time I came on as their, you know, lowly marketing intern, the online portion of their business had blown up by leaps and bounds compared to the little brick and mortar shop. And so that was my exposure to e-commerce and affiliate marketing and footwear specifically and SEO and pay-per-click advertising, all this stuff. And that was kind of the gateway into the online world for me and footwear specifically.
That's awesome. And so from there, once you started to build that shoe business more, or like the affiliate business more, when did you get to the point where it's like you kind of stopped doing it, if you stopped doing it, or maybe you're still doing it today?
Yeah. So it shut down in 2014 after kind of a long, slow period of decline. And I was, you know, when I quit my job, I was 25 to sell shoes on the internet. Like I felt like I had beat the system and I was so smart and I'd, you know, built my own corporate ladder and all this stuff. And it was a very rocky first several years in business. And I didn't have that exposure building it on the side because it was, you know, nothing bad had happened up until that point. Like this could be my thing. I could do this forever. Like, fine. It didn't turn out to be that way. Like a lot of businesses kind of have a finite lifespan, and this one kind of had reached the end of it, but it was very, I was very grateful to have had a couple other side projects to fall back on. One, you know, most I started a bunch of side projects on the side from the shoe business, most of which failed horribly, but it was the exercise of starting those that I think was important, because, you know, it's almost a numbers game. Like you got to have a lot of at bats before you get a couple hits in a lot of ways. But a couple of those did hit. One was the side hustle project. Another was the a virtual assistant kind of directory and review platform for outsourcing companies, which is kind of another random niche that I stumbled upon in part based on my own experience and struggles and like trying to figure out, you know, how do I find help for this business? Like, I don't want somebody coming over to my dining room table. Like, you can hire somebody remotely. Oh, there's companies that specialize in this, but like, are they legit? You know, so trying to crowdsource different reviews for those. And so those are the couple of projects that I'm still running today.
That's awesome. And I especially admire that you're doing so many different side projects at once, because I know that, like me personally, I'm such a multi-passionate person that I feel like I can really only handle the two ventures that I have going on right now without like feeling totally overwhelmed. So what would you recommend for people who have that same really passion and really want to be able to follow multiple things at once and just being able to manage it all?
Yeah, my general rule is simplify first, diversify second. And I'm like a big fan of diversification, like multiple income streams. Like it's a single source of income is a single point of failure. It's like a fragile way to live. So I'm all about diversification, but simplify first. Like, you know, dial in that one thing that's working, optimize it such that you have the time and the mental bandwidth to pursue the next thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a great point. It's just like getting really good at something. So that way, not necessarily that it's like running on its own, but you know it well enough that's going to continue before you end up pursuing another opportunity.
Yeah. And maybe you've flexed your marketing muscle or your business growth muscle, like as far as could be reasonable. Like maybe you start to see diminishing returns on that stuff, or you have brought on a team member to kind of manage the day to day. And now you have this like extra space, this extra block of time. And I found that is kind of, that results in a lot of creative energy to say like, oh, I could test something new out. And with the freedom, and it's something that side hustle provides in general, with the freedom to fail. Cause it's like, oh, I'm not necessarily relying on this income, you know, I've got this other thing that's paying the bills. And so it gives you a little bit more leeway there.
Absolutely. And with these different project ideas that you get, how do you know, or what's your advice for knowing if it's something that you should actually pursue or something that maybe you should wait to hold off on and maybe pursue it later in life? Because I know that like for me, I've come up with so many ideas and I'm like, oh, I think this is just really shiny object syndrome right now. And I think I need to kind of wait before I actually do something. So because you've done so many different side projects, what's kind of been your process for really analyzing if you should actually move forward or not?
I mean, the biggest one is kind of this gut feeling of like, if you can't get it out of your head, like if you can't shake it, it sits on your to-do, even if it sits on your to-do list for, or your idea list for weeks or months at a time, but you can't shake it, you still think there's something there, like that's a sign that you probably ought to act on it. Now, the flip side, and I'm curious to get your take on this too, is like, if you haven't acted on it yet, maybe you set a deadline. Like if I haven't done anything in 6 months, like it clearly is not a priority for me. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, there's bigger and better things. And so then it's like, okay, just table that, cross that off, or, you know, dump that into a Google Doc, a Notes Doc, like, okay, future projects or, you know, future ideas. Cause you never want to be without an idea. Like, you know, there's right. always something to fall back on. Like, should that rainy day happen where you're like, let me go back through the archives here. But let me flip that around. Like, you know, with all the different, you know, shiny objects that are out there, how do you end up prioritizing what to tackle?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, actually, to talk about student to CEO in general, I had basically done the same exact advice you had just given, was that I couldn't stop thinking about it. And so I didn't want to launch it right away because, again, I was like, is this something that I'm actually going to stick to, something that I actually have the time for, something that people are actually going to value? So what I ended up doing was I had ended up launching student to CEO exactly a year after I graduated from college because, one, I got this idea after I graduated, but then two, with over the past year, I've had tons of people message me through LinkedIn or email me or text me and be like, how did you do it? Like, how did you actually go off and do your own thing and take it full time? And I just had so many like weird signs that were kind of like pushing me in this direction. So I'm like, okay, one, I can't stop thinking about this idea. And two, people keep like asking me things and bringing things to me that show that it's something that the world actually needs. So that was like kind of my big push to go ahead and do it.
Was there pushback from friends or family or even internally, like, hey, I got a degree and now I'm not going to use that. Well, maybe you are kind of like in the same realm of your degree, but like, I'm going to, you know, the whole point of going to college is to get a good job. And then a year later, you're throwing it out the window and going to strike out on your own.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, a big reason why I did create Student to CEO was because in a lot of colleges, like entrepreneurship really is not even a thought. It's like they prepare you to beef up your resume, get those internships, prepare for job interviews and all of that stuff. And I'm like, hey, like this is like a really viable career. And so I wanted to be able to create that space where people who wanted support and ideas and stuff like that could come and get it. And so I did kind of face that pushback through my own company that kind of like, again, gave me more motivation to therefore launch like my passion project, Student to CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it hard to like cut ties and like really commit, like, okay, you can cut your own paycheck now. And it's like, what did you go to school for?
I know. I went for marketing.
Yeah, that's cool.
So ties in perfectly, owning like a marketing firm. But I mean, yeah. For some people, which I admire totally, the people who go to school for one thing and then start a business that is incredibly successful in a completely different industry.
Was the marketing stuff something you were doing on the side prior to going full-time into it?
Yeah. So I got my experience with my company through blogging. So I had started my blog when I was 15 and then I was freelancing by the time I was 17. And then I had basically started my company at the beginning of my sophomore year of college. So I had like about 3-ish years under my belt before really going forward.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, it's just been being able to inspire other people to do the same. Cause I always say I'm just a normal person. So if I can do it, so can anyone else.
Yeah.
And with starting your various side hustles, Nick, what was the most rewarding part of doing so?
I mean, the most rewarding part has been able to be in more control of my own calendar to, you know, have some say in how I get to spend my days. And I think that's kind of the ultimate goal, right? It's like, I want to have personal and time freedom. And I think, you know, whether or not that is ever fully 24 hour a day achievable, I don't know. There's always going to be kind of outside forces and responsibilities that you're going to have to play to. But, you know, it's a sliding scale. Like, and the closer you can slide that scale toward the 24 hour mark, I think the better off you're going to be, or at least like for me, like it was really like humiliating. I don't know if humiliating is the right word, but it sucked to have to go to my boss at my old job and like ask if I could take vacation on this particular week. And I didn't even get a ton of vacations. Like, can I take a couple days here? And he'd always say yes. So that wasn't really an issue. It just felt lame to have to ask somebody else like how you're going to spend your time. And just, I don't know, for whatever reason, that really rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah. the other thing that I will say kind of on this sliding scale is like, if you're currently working a job, you currently kind of find yourself like on the other end of that 24-hour spectrum where it's like, I am not in control of my own time. I am constantly putting out fires, reacting to other people's agendas. You can start to carve out a little bit of time for yourself. You know, maybe it's 15 minutes, maybe it's an hour, where you're most likely to find that time are kind of at the bookends of your days, you know, first thing in the morning, last thing before bed, and use that time for you to move some project forward that you care about, make some progress. And even when I was working full-time, like I found that habit like made me feel much more like empowered that I was at least doing something that I could in the time that I had.
Perfect advice. And I think it's really timely too for those who are listening who may be either going through school right now and looking to pursue like a side hustle or business that they want to launch, or even the people who also are in a 9-to-5 and want to be able to do something. I mean, being able to take the time that you have, the spare time, which is usually rare for most people, but taking that time and focusing on something that you're really passionate about and building it up, as you mentioned, can make you feel really empowered.
Yeah, it's a little thing, but you know, try to take a little bit of control back into your own hands.
Yes. And I totally agree with your point about wanting to have freedom in your own way, about feeling like just totally lame to ask someone for time off. It's like, it's such a rewarding feeling for me to just be like, all right, well, it's a nice sunny day here in Massachusetts, so I am going to take the day off and go to the beach and just throw my autoresponder and not be like having to plan well in advance for a potential beach day. So you're right. It's just like a gratifying feeling to be able to do that on your own.
Yeah.
And Nick, what do you think led to your success with the various side hustles that you've been running?
Yeah, I mean, one of the main things, I guess I'll name two. You know, first is the willingness to experiment, which I think is a really common trait amongst side hustle show guests as well. This willingness to try something out, not knowing if it's going to succeed or fail, not knowing maybe even what, you know, step two or three down the path is going to be, but you know, that willingness to take the first step, see where it leads. I think that's been huge. And the second thing is just kind of this almost dumb persistence. Like in the early days, especially of the blog and podcast, like relatively speaking, nobody is tuning in, but it's this dumb persistence in keeping going. Like there was just enough traction and I enjoyed doing it just enough to say, I can keep doing this. Like, let's do this another week. Let's do this another week. And I don't really know what I was getting myself into. I probably didn't anticipate doing 400 episodes, but it was just like, I'll give it a shot. See if I like it. Turns out years later, like I do really like it. And it's awesome. It's like a fun challenge to continually source, you know, new stories. And it's become, and this is from, what's it called? It's, Be So Good They Can't Ignore You, or So Good They Can't Ignore You.
Yes.
It's this book and it talks about, you know, don't start a business around your passion, start a business around something you're good at that you maybe care about a little bit. And that passion tends to come from doing the work. And I found that to be 100% true in the podcasting world. Like I had no passion for podcasting when I started. I didn't even know how it worked. Like it, almost by definition, you couldn't. But over the years, of course, it's something that I've developed. Even when I was painting houses in college, it was like I had no passion for painting, especially when I started. But over the course of a couple of years, you can't help but like looking up under the eaves of every house you walk past and be like, oh, there's a paint job waiting to happen. Or like, I'll come back here and I'll offer to do an estimate for these guys. It's like, it comes from doing the work in a lot of cases.
I think that's excellent advice that you just gave, because so many times, I mean, as you had already mentioned at the beginning of this episode, people think that what you're passionate about is what you should start a business about, but that isn't always the case. It's like, you really have to think about what you're good at. And even if you don't necessarily love it yet, but you enjoy it enough to maybe pursue it as a career, once you start doing it, then it becomes something that you truly enjoy and feel passionate about doing.
I think it's a stressful question. Like, what are you passionate about? It's like, well, I care about a lot of stuff, but I don't know if I'd call any of them like my undying passion. And actually it was another guest on the show. He was like, under no circumstance should you start a business around your passion. And I was like, well, why? He's like, well, if you're passionate about it, you know, yoga or fitness or whatever it is. Odds are other people are passionate about it too. And when people are passionate, they do irrational things like work for free. That's not a market that you want to play in. I was like, good point. And his whole gig was like, you know, blue collar startups, like go mow lawns, go paint houses, go do pressure washing, go install, you know, custom closets and stuff. It's like, because, you know, it's a growing market share. People don't have those skills themselves these days, or they don't want to do them themselves these days. And the pie just keeps getting bigger, but he's like, don't start another, you know, yoga YouTube channel or something.
That is a fair point. And also too, I mean, now that we're like talking about this, I'm like thinking like, oh, what are my passions? And I have a few passions on my mind that I'm like, I would never start a business like about that. Why can't it just be a passion? Why does it have to be a business? You know, something that you can just treasure and not have to turn it into something that makes money.
Yeah. I mean, the advantage, like in my case, would be like skiing and like, okay, maybe I start like a skiing related blog or YouTube channel. And like, maybe I do like gear reviews, like maybe best case, I get some free swag. Like that would be cool. Maybe I could like write off ski trips. Like that would be kind of cool. I mean, there's some benefits of it, but it's hard. And then you risk turning it into work. Like the stuff that you loved about it now becomes, a chore, and then you're like, well, I just killed it. What was that?
I was just going to say that. You took the words out of my mouth. But you're so right. It's like not everything that becomes a business idea has to be a passion. There's definitely ideas that can become passions, but doesn't have to start from there.
Right.
And if there was one thing you wish you did differently, or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
I think the biggest, especially as it relates to the shoe business, the biggest thing would have been to recognize that there was a finite lifespan, where I talked about kind of naively thinking that it could just go on in perpetuity, but recognizing a lot of businesses have kind of a finite lifespan. So get while the getting's good. If you have found something that is working for you, be it a marketing method, a you know, customer experience strategy, whatever, you know, whatever it is, you know, double down on that. Double down on that while that's working, because it might go away. Some algorithm might update. Some competitor might come in. I think you can take full advantage of it while you can, when you can. Just because you never know what's coming down the road, and make sure to take some of those profits off the table rather than just continually plowing forward for the sake of growth.
Yeah, definitely. And so because, as you mentioned, I mean, it's an interesting point. Most businesses have a finite lifespan. Is that one of your big reasons for wanting to continuously diversify your income and have all these different projects?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's weird to think about, you know, at what stage of business are some of these other projects right now? Like, are they on the downhill slope? Like in my mind, like there's still lots of upside to go. And it's interesting to think about, well, what happens when, you know, AI produced content becomes a thing? Like, who cares about this one person's individual opinion? Like, they just trained a robot. Especially on the podcasting front, you've seen it in a lot of cases where big money has entered this medium, and now it's like NPR and New York Times. Like, there's some really, really well done shows for an indie podcaster to compete with. It's like, well, you really got to bring it in terms of content, because you're not going to be able to produce with a staff of, you know, 14 people to make a half an hour daily show.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. And so just being able to think about and evaluate like where these different projects lie in terms of what the opportunities may lay ahead is huge for being able to see when it might be time to start to bring in something else to focus on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about this diversification. This is probably like, it fuels my own entrepreneurial ADD, and like, what can I do over here? Like, how can I develop some other income stream? And I don't know, in a lot of ways, grateful to have built a business that allows that level of experimentation. But for most people getting started, I would say focus on that one thing, get that thing dialed in, get that thing working, and then start to think about branching out.
Yes, so true. I mean, like I started Student to CEO almost 4 years after I had started Dash of Social. And so it got to the point where it's like, as you had just talked about, I was with Dash of Social, like basically feeling like everything was on autopilot, that things were going good, that I wasn't really spending as much time in the business as I was, but I was still growing. And so at that point, like, I have this very like weird nagging feeling where if I'm not doing something, I'm like, I'm wasting like productive time. Like, I should be doing something productive. And it's just something that I've always like had this feeling of. And so I actually, another reason why I started Student to CEO is because I don't look at it as work, but I work on it like at night sometimes and sometimes on weekends and stuff like that. And it's a way to kind of fill that like nagging feeling without actually doing work, because I wanted to not do my marketing work at night or on weekends, but needed to fill the void. So I think you're right. Like, being able to get really good at what you're currently doing before bringing on something else is what will help to ensure that you're going to end up getting to that success where you want to be.
Yeah, very cool.
And why do you think it's so important for individuals to start a business at a young age specifically?
There's actually a Warren Buffett quote, or at least attributed to Warren Buffett, that says, you know, the age at which somebody starts their first business is a huge predictor for their ultimate, you know, entrepreneurial success. And maybe that's a proxy for financial success down the road. Whether or not that first business or those first businesses, you know, are home run hits. It's kind of like getting in your reps and getting your experience. But for me, I think it's a tremendously valuable skill set. Like, we're kind of trained, and I think this is starting to shift a little bit, but we're trained, you know, go to school, get good grades. And like, the education system is built to, you know, just crank out employees. But meanwhile, the market has turned around. It's like, well, we don't necessarily need or want employees in a lot of ways. Like, we need creative thinkers, we need problem solvers. And the skill set from running your own thing, like, to wear multiple hats, the marketing, the production, the sales, the customer support, like, all that stuff is really, really valuable. Mm-hmm. So even if it doesn't end up being a thing, even if it ends up, you know, being just like, I'm going to work corporate and I'm totally fine with that, I'm going to make a good salary. Like, who's going to be more valuable to the employer? This person who, you know, used their spare time to watch Netflix, or this person who used their spare time to like build real life skills and like practice being their own mini CEO.
Right.
I think having my part-time venture made me a better employee, just because it kind of gave me the big picture outlook for a lot of the stuff that we were working on. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember reading about this whole concept of intrapreneurship, where it's like when you're working in a company, but you have all of these innovative ideas that you're, it's almost like you're acting like an entrepreneur for the company, but just like bringing in all these new ideas. So I think you made a really great point there, that by starting your own little side hustle or side gig and being able to bring those skills and knowledge that you have to your other job, if you do have one, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I wasn't the world's greatest worker. My boss told me when I transferred across the country, he's like, the scouting report on you is you'll never be an all-star. And I was like, are you telling me this to motivate me? Like, what? Yeah. Like, what's the point of the story? It was just like, I don't know. But it was very grateful to have something to fall back on, or something that, you know, was kind of bubbling up on the side, just because it we like that empowerment that we talked about. Just, you know, being maybe not, I'm not in full control of my financial picture just yet, but I'm taking steps to get there. I'm making some progress.
Yes, absolutely. Nick, you have shared such great advice throughout this episode that I know our listeners are going to absolutely love while they're listening to it. But now I'd love to ask you if you had one last piece of advice to share for someone who may just be starting out.
I think it's that experimenter's mindset that we talked about. It's this, you know, willingness to try something, willingness to fail. Like, think like a scientist in the laboratory. You know, you got your lab coat on, you got your test tubes. Maybe the test tube blows up, or, you know, maybe something doesn't go quite as planned. And the scientist isn't like, well, that was a abject failure, I'm never doing another experiment again. They're like, okay, what happened? How do we fix it? How do we figure it out? And then we move on to the next experiment. So if I could be one piece of advice, it would be to adopt that experimenter's mindset.
Love it. And now I'd love if you could share where our listeners can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
You bet. So of course, we'd love to have you tune into the Side Hustle Show. You'll find it in any podcast app. If you are in the position of still looking for a side hustle idea, a business idea, sidehustlenation.com/ideas is my constantly constantly updated laundry list of part-time business ideas that you can start today. My hope is by the end of your time scrolling through that page, you got 8 or 10 different browser tabs open. Like, that looks interesting. I want to learn more about that. That's the mark of a getting the creative juices flowing.
Awesome. I'll make sure to leave those links in the show notes in case anyone who missed it, they can go through and click from there. But Nick, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.